The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Years ago, I mean decades ago, I had a friend, and we were talking, and he said to me, "I'm seeing someone about my problem." And I was like, what are you talking about?
That sounds surreptitious.
And, therapy, the language of therapy, the revelation of therapy.
Has changed a lot.
Has come a long, long way. Yeah. I mean, therapy sort of used to be like something that was whispered, like, you know, in the terms of, he's an alcoholic. You know, something to be shame-filled. If you were going to go.
She has depression.
Right. I have depression? Oh, my. What? But now it's kind of out in the open for some people. But there still is a stigma.
It should be out in the open for everybody. I think we're on the right track, but we've certainly not arrived when it comes to mental health in the church.
Eugene Park is back with us. He's a regular guest on our show. Eugene is associate pastor of True North Church in Palo Alto, California, host of a podcast called Off the Pulpit. Eugene, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Eugene, John and I have both talked about the fact that we advocate therapy for every person.
We do.
Every single person should be in therapy because every single person is screwed up. And one of the beautiful things about being in therapy is saying out loud, I have a problem. And that is so healing. It's such a wonderful bit of freedom to admit to another human what God already knows, which is the fact that we have problems.
Yes. And I think, like you said, I think there's huge benefits in the greater C church culture that this is becoming more of a norm. It's not whispered as before. It's not something you did in secret. And at times it's encouraged. But I do still see a gap in between it. And this is the thing. I don't think a therapist is a magic worker.
No.
I know some people that overuse therapy.
Yes.
I think, oh, I'm in therapy, so don't talk to me about my problems because I'm seeing a professional about it. No, I think it's a way that God can speak to you through one medium. But I just think there is a gap. And I, like you said, I think just the ability for us to recollect a lot of what our past trauma is and not just throw it away, but see how does God move through that then, now, and the future is so important, not just for our emotional lives, but also for our spiritual well-being.
Right, right. Okay, now, the idea that everybody should be in therapy, I mean, I know people would hear that. A lot of people would say, they would scoff at that and say, that's ridiculous. Suck it up and get on with it because life is hard, right? But there are instances, of course, where people need to have some counseling, some wisdom coming their way. However, Eugene, you know, the church is somewhere in the middle of that, right? I mean, in many ways, the church is the first great mediator, the church is the first therapy in some way. But at the same time, like you're saying, people can overuse it. And with that, depending upon who you are, I think probably especially age, culture, whatever, there is an element of shame that still goes along with this. So people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. And I think shame is really intertwined with this phenomenon, this problem of mental health. I've been talking with a lot of my friends. I'm in a unique position coming into Western life as an Asian American. And it was always a weird thing for me because I came from a culture that was primarily honor and shame, meaning that much of society of what my parents lived through was the paradigm of, does this honor me or does this bring me shame to my family and to myself? Mm. The Western world for a while, I think, operated off innocence or guilt, meaning very logical, very forensic. Is this innocent or is this guilty? I do see now, especially with Twitter, with cancel culture, there is a huge shift even in the Western world from this innocence guilt paradigm into the honor shame paradigm. For example, how we cancel celebrities or any high profile author or verified user on whatever social media platform you think of. Before it was, let's bring evidence so that maybe we can take it to court and to prove to you, this person is wrong. Nowadays, what we see is, no, there's a mob online maybe there's a shred of evidence, but the main way to attack them is not presenting evidence, but just by canceling them. What is that? It's a public shaming. So I see there's a huge shift going on. And with that shift, there's going to be a lot of need to kind of go through therapy and to look to our past. And, you know, I don't want to, not just a secular way, hopefully with Christian psychologists and Christian counselors, but that's much needed in this shift that's happening, I feel, in this culture.
Okay, so Eugene, then coming from the culture of honor shame, you probably uniquely can look at the benefits and the detriments of the whole engagement. Yeah, there has to be positive things about this.
Yeah, there are a lot of positive things. I think honor and shame bring a much bigger communal type of mentality to culture. So meaning this is a good thing in certain ways. I think even, you know, it might go overboard in some cases, but let's just take the example of the summer of 2020. There was a collective anger among a lot of minorities of what they were seeing on the news, on their Twitter feed, whatever it may be, whether it be George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, that before, in a very individualistic kind of innocent guilt shame, they would see that and be like, oh, that's horrible. Let's seek justice. I think the thing that honor and shame brings is a collective type of thinking of what can we do together? Because this action brings our group shame, or what can we do to kind of, you know, honor what's been happening? So I think that's a positive. There are a lot of negatives. Like in any type of culture, there's no dominant culture that should be the culture, if that makes sense. I think the negatives are there's a sense of hierarchy that comes, and you already kind of see it, especially on the left. Woke Olympics is often term used, meaning now, yes, there's a collective sense of we should seek justice. But now there's also this hierarchy of, well, who has the most oppression? Who is the most woke? And there are good things that come with that, but the hierarchy that it brings, I think, is one, very anti-gospel. But two, it doesn't bring about any type of justice with that type of system, if that makes sense. I might be just talking up.
No, it makes sense. And in the 4 o'clock hour, Eugene, we were talking about how when outrage or victimization is your collateral online, it disincentivizes you granting forgiveness to someone who's hurt you, someone who has injured you, someone who has shamed you, whatever it is. There's, if you're getting your brand based on how angry you are or how much you've suffered, then relinquishing that doesn't help you in any way, right? It only serves to lessen you in the eyes of the public. And there's something really profoundly sick about that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there is, you know, the flip side of what's going on these days is there could be a victim mentality that's often, you know, a common term used. So I do think we have to be careful. But with all that being said, though, I'm thankful these problems are now in our lap, because 10 years ago, we weren't even thinking about victims and abuse. And I think your point, Kathy, is well brought up. But I do think the bigger scheme, at least from my eyes as well, is a lot of these issues that we've been seeing, people that are claiming victim, but maybe they're taking it too far. But also with that, there are issues that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that wouldn't even count as abuse. It's like, oh, just suck it up. Like, kind of like what John mentioned. So again, it's a mixed bag. And I think we have to tread mental health and therapy carefully. I can see that it becomes like, hey, I don't need Jesus. I got my therapist. I can easily do that, right? But what I'm thankful for overall is there are certain issues that weren't being talked about that are now being talked about. And again, mixed bag, but that is something that I'm thankful for as a pastor, and even as someone that's seen trauma or abuse in the church, in the family, wherever it may be.
Right, that's really good. Eugene Park is with us. Eugene, so what about the difference, right? People will say, I'm seeing a therapist, but really what I prefer to see is a Christian therapist. There is a wide difference here.
Yeah, I mean, there's very various ways of how Christians tackle mental health. I think Tim Keller had a really good article on City to City a couple of years ago, kind of chronicling it. There's kind of, you know, I'm very general, broad strokes, three ways to do it. There's very Christian biblical counseling, meaning, hey, just the Bible, and that is it. There are some that kind of take, oh, hey, a lot of the clinical secular psychologists, their models and theories are helpful. And the third way is a hybrid model, where it kind of takes the best of both worlds and trying to work them together. I actually think, and this might be controversial, I'm not sure, but I actually think there are times and spaces for all three, that they're actually a kind of a toolkit for your trauma or for whatever you're dealing with. So meaning, I think a lot of, and I'm going to be a little blunt, a lot of fools need biblical counseling. You just need to hear the word.
Yeah.
And that's what your problem isn't that you don't understand your trauma, or you just haven't read your Bible. So you might need that. I would actually argue, though, those that suffer from a lot of, you know, severe trauma, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, manipulation, I would actually say that maybe not even just a hybrid model, maybe you need to see secular psychologists who have seen these models of trauma before, because the idea of trauma is still relatively new to the church, I would say. So a lot of these Christian psychologists, they're not equipped to deal with it. So again, I think there's room for every type of counseling. And this is a thing I tell my church members too. Counseling is like dating. You got to find the right counselor. It's not this, you know, it's almost like church. Like you just can't go to any church. You know, you want to find the right pastor and vision.
Right.
Same thing with a counselor too. They need to be able to match with you and understand you. And you need to be able to feel secure and safe around them to share. But again, kind of like Kathy said, I really do hope everyone listening, and I hope churches would push this, every person should seek counseling at one point or another, because it's so helpful just to look through your past and see how much it shaped your present.
Fabulous.
That's the Reverend Eugene Park. Eugene, terrific to see you.
Always a pleasure, Eugene.
Always good to see you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Eugene Park from Palo Alto, California. Check out the podcast. It's called Off the Pulpit. Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.